Do you want to talk about how you're feeling right now?
Oh, so many questions. What does this mean? What do I do?
Go on! Tell them what you think!
I liked it.
I think your calculations may have been off.
I think it's all right.
I just have a lot of feelings.
This pleases me.
These are perfectly normal feelings.
Do you even know what you sound like when you talk like that?
Now, shall we begin?
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Real Feels podcast. It's Drew here.
And Nathan!
Dun. Guys, you know what? Every other Wednesday, we come to you because we want to bring you movies. We love talking about movies, and we want you here for that experience. So if you're coming back to us, fantastic. Pull up a chair, pour yourself a drink, enjoy the ambiance that we have provided for you. And more importantly, if this is your first time listening to us, again, welcome. Pull up a chair, pour yourself a drink, and get ready for some high-flying action in this
upcoming movie.
I think it's going to be great.
This is one of my faves. It's such a unsung hero. It's nice, low, under the radar. It's great. I love it.
You know, honestly, Nathan, like before you brought this movie up, I had never seen it. And I will be, I think, quite honest, I had never heard of it. So,
which, I mean, in most cultures, that's a sin or at least blasphemy. But, you know, that's okay. I'm glad that I was able to evangelize the gospel to you and bring it because Kurt Russell and Steven Seagal, which I don't even know if we can like really, I mean, his face is on it in some like languages, but at the same time,
because the original movie poster only had Kurt Russell's face on it, but then they started putting it on, I think it was like the Swedish or the German posters, because at the time Steven Seagal was
He's really popular
over in the countries. So then, then they started having the movie posters with both of them on it.
Which, I mean, I'm not, so speaking of the cover, for the longest time, I swear to God, I thought that Kurt Russell, like that black piece, was a samurai sword. Now you're gonna look at that and you're gonna see what I see.
Now did I know you see samurai sword simply because it was Steven Seagal.
I don't know if it was that or because it looks like it's Kurt Russell, like that he has like a samurai sword or something
on the poster,
and like maybe because of the orange, the ambiance felt like a little like, oh yeah, it's kind of like, you know, samurai sword worthy. Hmm. No, absolutely not. Not even close.
All right. Well, we'll get there. But, you know, Nathan, more importantly, there is a purpose for this movie. It wasn't even the fact that you brought it to my attention and you're like, oh my gosh, executive decision, 1996. We've got to watch this movie because we need an action flick. And I was like, okay, I don't even know the movie, whatever. Well, yeah, let's do it. You seem really excited. It's great. And you're like, it's got Kurt Russell. It's got Steven Seagal. And I was like, Steven Seagal, you say. And this gave me the perfect idea. Ladies and gentlemen, our good friends down in Australia, Paul and Wayne of the Countdown podcast, do a fantastic show. But more importantly, at this time, Wayne is recovering from hip replacement surgery. And
ouch.
This is our get well, you know, episode for Wayne. So Wayne,
aww,
this episode is for you, man.
All for you, bud.
All for you. We are hoping that you are recovering well and, you know, able to get up and, you know, dance the tango once more. Maybe run away from those tall women that you won't date. Thank you, Paul. That was a good plug. All right.
Some rock climbing, maybe some, you know, maybe you'll do an executive decision and have to climb aboard a 747 Boeing and save the world. Who knows?
All right. Yeah, you know, they do a fantastic show where they take top 10 lists and they talk about movies. And you know what? I'm not going to do this justice. I'm going to drop their promo right now.
Do you piss green after you've eaten vitamins? We certainly do, and therefore you should listen to the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast.
Even if you don't piss green, is it something I think you guys will like if you like TV and you like movies?
We count down lists associated with both, as well as offer the occasional review and a number of segments that are random in nature for your enjoyment.
Check out the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews on iTunes, Podomatic, or your favorite podcast app.
All right, guys, so that is the Countdown Movie and TV Review podcast out of Australia with Paul and Wayne. It is a hilarious show. They come out with a new episode every week, and they've had a slew of guest stars come on to the episode in Wayne's absence while he's been recovering. And you know what? It's the abundance of camaraderie that I have found in the podcast community, where people are joining together in this, you know, this Potterdom. Everyone is coming together. They're joining hands and they're helping each other out, because Wayne was recovering.
Kumbaya. Oh no.
You know what? But people came together and they were helping Paul out and coming in and guest hosting. And you know what? You just find some great people out there. And it was a joy to listen to people guest spot with Paul and just await Wayne's return. So Wayne, this episode is for you. We hope you're feeling better. But more importantly, spoiler alert, this is the first movie where Steven Seagal dies. Because if anybody has listened to the Countdown podcast, they know Wayne's love, and I am using the biggest air quotes that I possibly can. They know that Wayne loves Steven Seagal.
And who doesn't?
More importantly, he loves him so much that he has challenged him to a fight.
Which, I mean, that's a little overboard, but I understand, because there's a lot of, you know, speculation on whether or not Steven Seagal is legit or not with his karate and his martial arts.
With his karate and being a... God, wasn't there a TV show where he was a sheriff for a while?
So instantly I thought of Texas Ranger, but that was Chuck Norris, and...
Don't you besmirch Chuck Norris'
name. No. But you see, that's the thing, is that once you said, like, oh, hey, wasn't he in a TV show? And my brain was just like, ooh, Walker, Texas Ranger? What? Oh, no. Oh, we're talking about someone totally different. That's how much the brain just kind of veers right into that. So...
Yeah.
But yeah, Steven Seagal, he's been in a ton of stuff, and a lot of the straight-to-DVD type movies, but he's had some pretty big hits where, you know, he made a name for himself.
He has. There's no doubting that he definitely made a name for himself, but, you know, this is just one of those movies where you told me that Steven Seagal dies really early on in the film, and I said, this is perfect for Wayne, this is what's going to make him chuckle and happy. And you know what? By gosh, we're going to dedicate an episode to him.
And we hope you get well, guys, soon.
Yeah, we hope you get well, Wayne. You got to get back onto the show.
Get in there.
Get in there. All right, guys. Without a doubt and without any hesitation, we have 1996's Executive Decision.
Excuse me, sir. May I help you? Sir?
In an age...
Excuse me, sir. May I help you?
When terrorism knows no boundaries. And the level of threat...
I have a message for the American president.
...knows no limits.
I am in control of Flight 343.
Well, sir, I don't think this is about hostages.
What are you talking about?
A shipment of the nerve toxin DZ-5 was hijacked.
Are you saying nerve gas is on board?
Yes, sir, I am. They plan to use the DZ-5 and the airplane together to detonate here over Washington.
When global response is routine,
London is demanding immediate action.
There's a hatch on the belly of the 747 near the nose.
We could dock there.
I know you wrote the book on assaulting hijacked aircraft, but this is 5 miles above the Earth.
I don't think we have any other options.
And advanced technology.
Who's this? 007?
Can accomplish miracles.
What are you doing up here?
Who the hell else is gonna do it? You?
I'm opening the outer hatch.
A life or death decision.
I hope there's a good movie on this flight.
For 400 hostages in a plane.
Keep it going.
Or 40 million civilians on the ground.
You can forget Washington. There's enough nerve agent here to wipe out half the eastern seaboard.
Will come down to a choice between the unthinkable.
The pain.
Pentagon is gonna shoot us down.
And the impossible.
I'll reach our airspace in 85 minutes.
The hatch has got to be closed now, or we'll lose both planes.
Order the F-14s to intercept the 747.
Kurt Russell.
I'm losing control of the airplane.
Halle Berry, John Leguizamo, and Steven Seagal.
We're not going to make it!
You are!
Warner Brothers invites you.
We're really going to shoot this plane down, are we?
It's too late. They've already crossed the line.
To fasten your seatbelts.
This is directly from the president himself.
Everybody down!
Now you have your orders. Execute them.
Executive decision.
Okay.
Mm.
You know what I love about like the older trailers from the 90s? You have that beautiful narration of Don LaFontaine.
In a world.
In a world where terrorism strikes into the heart of everyone.
When he was just a normal guy trying to get home to see his family. No, but
there's a fantastic comedian named Pablo Francisco who, back in the day when I used to like have cable and watch Comedy Central, he would be on there and he would do the movie preview voice, which is exactly what Don LaFontaine did. And he did the whole like, in a world where a man sold tortillas on the corner.
I loved that one. Get down!
He was so funny.
Get down again!
Get down! Okay, I mean, he made fun of Arnold because Arnold was the little tortilla boy.
And very well done.
It was funny. It was very clever and well done, and it kind of brought you back to the idea of the 90s. And frankly, speaking of the 90s, with the introduction of this film, is it just me, or did a majority of action films in the 90s love that scrolling typing text across the screen?
And it was, I think, more of the trying to get that exposition in without having straight up narrator boring you. They thought it was very edgy. You know, ooh, yeah, we'll have a computer type it out and they'll have to read it while they're kind of looking at some random bit of like a runway or
the scenery, the outside of the house.
Yeah. You know, just what's going on? What am I looking at? But yeah, it doesn't get done over like to death. 'Cause a lot of times they'll do it just to kind of, clue you in on what you're looking at. You know, oh,
right.
You know, 6,000 miles above the earth. Like, oh, that space.
So along with the credits that are rolling with the location of the intro of the movie, you have the name of our director for this film, which is Stuart Baird. And he's not really known for directing. He only has 3 credits under his belt. And his very first movie is this movie from 1996, Executive Decision. And then he moved on to U.S. Marshals and then Star Trek Nemesis. More importantly, what he's known for, though, is editing. He has some fantastic films under his belt for being an editor. He has Demolition Man, Maverick, Legend of Zorro, Casino Royale. We both love Casino Royale.
Love it.
Salt, and gonna have to take a breath here. Green Lantern. So bad. 47 Ronin, and most recent, Tomb Raider.
Ah, you know, and 47 Ronin was kind of a one you had to blink a lot at because, I don't know. It's Keanu Reeves, though.
It's Keanu Reeves. It was a fun movie.
Yeah.
You kind of have to be in the mood for it, and you kind of got to understand that, like, they're going to take a lot of liberties with trying to make it very supernatural, but also action at the same time. It was fun. It was a fun watch, but it's, not a great movie, not, like, one of the best things that Keanu Reeves has done, unlike John Wick, which, man.
Fantastic.
I love John Wick. If anybody wants to listen to a fantastic recount of John Wick, go over to So I Married a Movie Geek. Justin and Chrissy talk about John Wick and John Wick 2. So that's a great episode that y'all can go listen to. So, directed by Stuart Baird, you had a budget of $55 million. And the U.S. gross came out to $56 million.
Making money already.
$1 million. So they barely broke even, really. But then, thankfully, worldwide gross came out to $121 million. So they made some money. They made money and a half. So yeah. that was good. That's really good. But also, more importantly, with this film, you have a really, really star-studded cast.
Very like star-studded.
Not huge names, but you have people that, one, you're going to recognize.
That's what I was about to say. Like, each person in this, you kind of either recognize and go, oh my gosh, that's so-and-so from so-and-so, you know? Or it's people that go on to do very
other things, uniquely
like big thing.
Right. Like, one of the military guys is it's Dr. Kelso from Scrubs.
Ah, yes.
And how we both love and adore that television show. But it's kind of interesting to see him as like this military guy who's all like, we should give in to all of their demands. I'm like, wow, this isn't Dr. Kelso. But
Ken Jenkins
is happening very, very closely to the time where that was coming out. But who else? You got Halle Berry, and this is her her very first $1 million role.
She got paid.
She did. She originally turned down the role, but then she was offered $1 million to do the part, and she's like, yep. So she took it up, and she I'm actually glad. I'm glad that she was part of this movie. I think she did a good job in the film.
And yeah, she held her own. She doesn't get a crazy amount of screen time. It's that just enough, because she's not pulling a lot of the strings. She's just kind of reacting to a lot of the situation, which I think she does a fantastic job. No Razzie needed for this film.
No, definitely no Razzie needed for the film.
But you also have like within the like group of little military operatives, Joe Morton.
Mm-hmm.
You got B.D. Wong.
B.D. Wong.
Oh,
he is my favorite part of like, oh my gosh, it's him kind of moment in the movie, where every single thing that I've seen B.D. Wong in has not been this, you know, badass commando, I'm going to like board a plane, shoot some terrorists kind of like macho role. It's always been he was the assistant to Martin Short in Father of the Bride.
Mr. Bongs.
Everybody has a party pooper. And that's why we invited you.
Party pooper.
Or he's been the calm, you know, kind of collected
technician of Jurassic Park.
Okay, yeah, no, he was there.
It's a Velociraptor. Right.
And then Law and Order Special Victims Unit. He was like the psychologist.
Yeah.
Right. So this was a big change for something that I've seen that I had not seen him in before. So that was, I think that's the biggest takeaway for me for this movie, where it's like, you know what? I saw B.D. Wong kind of be the action hero, and that was fun for me.
He plays a good, like, middle of the road, just nothing over the top, just kind of second in command, like, dude, what do we do now?
Right. Right. He's doing his job.
Whip Hubley, who plays Baker, little callback to Top Gun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's been in a couple of things that just, you see him and you're like, oh, you're one of those 80s guys. I love it. Yeah.
Right.
Joe Morton as Cappy. Yep. And you got to give him props for being completely not useless throughout the film. I mean, he's just laying on his back and enjoying dismantling a bomb somehow.
Right, while being, quote-unquote, basically paralyzed.
With a mirror and just kind of, that's it.
Right. Oliver Platt, actually, I liked him in this role, too, where he almost played a similar nerdy kind of computer geek in Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams.
Okay.
I think it was almost like the same character, where it's like he was nerdy enough to do his job, but he was also like kind of eager beaver kind of situation where he was ready to prove himself. But man, you know, we have Kurt Russell as one of our leads, but then you have Steven Seagal as well. And Steven Seagal,
Colonel Austin Travis.
Colonel Austin Travis. Oh my gosh. Okay, so at the beginning of this movie, you have them storming this like mansion in Italy where this terrorist cell is hiding out, and slowly and surely they're kind of like sneaking up. They're taking out all the guards on the outside. They throw the grappling hooks. They go inside. They shoot up the people that are waiting in the kitchen. They, you know, go through the window and, you know, light off a bomb, and they take out the people that are waiting in the upstairs room as well. I counted 16 people killed.
Like flies. They drop.
Which is right in the drop. It's like 3 minutes. So like 16 people die in 3 minutes. Sorry, 17. One of the one of the military's group's guys is taken out.
He is.
16 bad guys, one good guy.
And Steven Seagal, Travis, is very upset that it's not there. That they had bad intel.
They're looking for the item. They're looking for their prize. And it's definitely not there. And it's kind of interesting where he says nothing. He says nothing in the beginning of the film. And I kept a close watch because every single time that you see Steven Seagal, he's not saying anything.
Well, John Leguizamo has to like basically give all the details and fill in
the bad news. And
he rolls with all. And pretty much every line is his comic relief, trying to lighten the mood. He's kind of the edgy, you know,
right, he's trying to be funny and Mr. jokey guy, which actually apparently during the filming of this some of his lines were actually improvised, and Kurt Russell was not having it.
Yeah,
he was not enjoying it. Like, I guess there's the scene where he takes off the shoes, and you know, John Leguizamo was all like, man, I hope the smell doesn't give us away. And that was an improvised line, and it was a joke, and Kurt Russell did not enjoy it. And then there was he was not having it. There was another scene where Steven Seagal had said something, and John Leguizamo thought it was a joke, so he was laughing at it. But Steven Seagal was horribly insulted, apparently, and pressed John Leguizamo up against a wall with his elbow. So, ooh, like, basically assaulted him on set.
Yeah, it was back then. You could do whatever you want.
Okay.
I mean, look at where we've come from, man. Like, I mean, look how many people are like no longer even in Hollywood now because of the stuff they did back then. Like, I mean, a little elbow. Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah. How certain things are kind of like not at that. Oh, look, you did this. OK, we're not even going to like have you in anything in Hollywood anymore. But
so strangely, I am so surprised, though, at David Schuette, who plays Nagad Hassan, the main bad guy, who,
yes,
spoiler alert for anyone that ever watches or reads anything Agatha Christie, that's Poirot. Like, this little Belgian man just is a terrorist. That's great. That's amazing. Great acting, though. Fantastic.
No, it was great acting. I loved how calm and collected he was throughout the entire film.
He always had control. Like,
he did.
Even when like his guys like,
and he was charismatic about it too.
Yeah. When he talks to the senator, he's like, oh yeah, like when the time comes, I'll come to you, dude. Don't worry. But every single time, everything that comes up, he just is like, nope, maintain course. We're all good. This is what we're doing. We're all going to die. Sounds great.
Right. I mean, they do their mission in the beginning, they don't find their thing, and then it immediately cuts to the fact that we have
a cut it out.
Russell,
are you going?
Kurt Russell on a plane.
I thought you said it immediately cuts to, and I was like, oh, we're doing cut it out. Let's do it.
No, we're not doing cut it out.
No,
no, not yet. No.
Right.
You got to get to the point where like cut it out would actually be, because okay, what do we got? We have Kurt Russell on a plane. He's flying the plane. He's obviously learning how to fly the plane at this point. This was the predictability of the story, which, again, I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but I can totally tell for the fact that he is learning to fly the plane. He lands the plane. He's kind of like, you know, timid about, you know, forgetting to flip a lever or to push this button in order to fly right. And the guy's like, just calm down, breathe and fly the plane. He's like, okay, yeah, yeah.
Landing gear.
Landing gear. You're going to go off and you're going to fly the plane on your own. He's like, are you sure? He's like, I wouldn't send you out there if I was not sure that you were ready. And immediately in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, okay. He's going to have to land the plane at the end of the movie. So again, not a bad movie, not a bad story, just predictable.
But that I feel like is a small gripe when it comes to the fact that you have, this is why I really struggled with this beginning, because after the little mission goes south, I immediately thought back to The Rock and thought, you know what? The way that they set up the problem and the premise and everything like that in The Rock, they do it spot on. There's a couple of things that maybe take a little bit longer than it should. However, the delivery is fantastic and very well done. This just felt like when you're talking to someone and they say the phrase, hey, land the plane, like meaning just get to the point. That's exactly how I felt with this whole beginning of just get them on, like just skip all this. This is all very wonky and it doesn't take off very well. No pun intended.
You know, it doesn't. Right as he's about to fly away, that's when they, like a car stops him and they're like, oh, phone call for you. And now, Nathan, now is my cut it out.
Bring it on.
What were you thinking?
Well, you got me. By all accounts, it doesn't make sense.
And you've got to cut it out.
Okay, so with cut it out, we like to look for certain scenes in a movie that can either be taken out of the film entirely or somehow dramatically changed. But more importantly, for, you know, cut it out. We want to take them out, and it's not going to change the story at all. It shouldn't be detrimental to the plot. It shouldn't take away anything. So with my cut it out, it's exactly at this moment when he's being stopped by the lady saying, phone call for you. And he kind of waves to her and says, yeah, okay. And he's powering down the plane. And for some reason, it transitions to this weird sepia tone, slow motion, black and white flashback type thing. And it's, you know, set in a foreign country. A man is getting kidnapped. They blow up a car with a bazooka. It's like disrupting this wedding that's taking place. And this dude gets thrown in the back of a car. And obviously it's our main bad guy who he has some type of relation to the guy. You can tell that he's concerned that he's being taken away and his men are trying to like shoot at the car. And he's saying, stop. You know, don't do it. Here's the thing. I can get background from it. I can take stuff away from it and I can understand more of the story. But the way they're delivering it in the movie, it takes me out of the movie. It seems disconnected from Kurt Russell's character because it's not happening to him. We haven't even necessarily met our bad guy yet, so you don't know that that's the bad guy. It just seems out of place. They could have done even another, like, you know, scrolling text across the screen as they, you know, suddenly came to Washington. Or
exactly.
Or if they, I don't know, did some, you know, file being transferred to the Secretary of Defense saying, you know, this man was taken captive and he's the brother to, you know, this, you know, lead terrorist out of this country. Fine. But that flashback was just weird. And I
there's probably don't like four it. Different ways they could have done this way better. Sure. Just astronomically different and on point. And then they chose this, and it's like, okay, well, if there was a moment, if there was a segment that we had of go get popcorn now, this would be that, right? Because, yeah, but you're,
this is,
you know,
this is get your snacks.
20 minutes
this
into the film. Right? Yeah. But I agree. This part is pretty rough. My cut it out, though, it's not even so much of a cut it out. It's more of a just rewrite it.
Okay.
So when they take, so right after this, they, you know, all meet up in Washington, you know, they somehow teleport there and, everyone assembles, figures out what they need to do, what the plan of attack, the only option that they can besides destroying the plane in midair with all these, you know, casualties. Mm-hmm. And who knows if this mystery gas that can kill everyone and, you know, 100 million block radius blows up, right. You know, it's the end of the world. Okay, got it. So they decide to put everyone on one special jet, go up, have a weird male appendages come up very awkwardly and connect and mate, so to speak, with the other... with the other plane, all while flying, and they won't even notice. So that part, as ludicrous as it is, this is what we got. They had to just figure it out and just get them on the plane. I almost wish that they would have used two planes. And here, and follow me on this.
Okay.
Cahill being on the first one, Oliver Platt, on the first plane, they establish, he goes up with Baker and, you know, one or two other guys. Because these planes are not built like Boeing, you know, 747s. These are military planes that can carry only a certain amount of weight. So having, you know, 10 people on, or, you know, 8 people in these things, it's a little bit much.
Right. And
having it where one goes up, a couple guys go in, they get all set up. The second plane, you know, that one detaches. The second plane comes up. It's a little bit wonky, a little bit rougher. That's where, you know, some of the problems start happening. And you also have Cahill up there for a reason. It's not so, they have to, like, explain it. Like, well, that's just what we're going to do. And, like, well, no, that's kind of dumb. Have a reason why he's up there, you know, because he established it first. And, like, he's going to wait for the second one and then he'll transfer out. I think the Cappy thing, him being paralyzed, that's all great. But that, just giving that whole scene a little bit more continuity, a little bit, you know, stronger support than just, hey, these planes can hold a million people. It doesn't matter. Like, weight is nothing.
But wasn't the main reason that Cahill was up there? Because he said, like, oh, you know, you establish the tube, it pressurizes, and then you can go up and you can open up the hatch at the bottom of the plane. And they're like, oh, okay, just like Seagal's like, teach my men. He's like, no, I can't teach
it.
Your men. I have to do it.
It's so complicated that I have to, like, open the blast
doors. Which is interesting because once you watch it, it doesn't seem so complicated. Like, the computer seems to be doing everything for him. But, I mean, maybe that was between, like, the cut scenes where you're not seeing what's exactly happening on the inside of the plane. And
the wiping of the frost off the handle, that you can't teach that.
You can't teach the fact that it's going to be cold up there. Right.
So they get up in the plane, and this is, well, most of them. And Wayne, here you go, man. This is a, you know what? Can you play the clip right now for Wayne? Let's just do that for him.
Play the clip, but let me set up this real quick. So for the first 23 minutes of the movie, Wayne, for you, this is a godsend. You do not hear one audible line from Steven Seagal for 23 minutes. But with the silence of Steven Seagal, you also have Steven Seagal squinting for 23 minutes.
Lots of squints. A lot of sun in the eyes.
Lots of sun in the eyes are going like, what am I doing here?
A lot of irritated Seagal feelings.
Which, I mean, you know what? That even goes towards the irritated Seagal feelings that, you know, his character has with Kurt Russell, which the animosity between the two, it's never clear.
Cut all that out. That was garbage in its hat. And I love this movie. I love this movie.
You never had any iota of
snip, snip, snip.
Like, why they hate each other, why they have a problem with each other. But that's
makes no sense.
That's a moot point. All right, so 23 minutes of no Steven Seagal talking, but then it is 20 minutes later when the tube, the giant black condom being stuck to the bottom of the other plane, starts to depressurize, and it's like shaking the plane, and it rips out, and Steven Seagal goes flying, and he actually hits the wing of the plane. He bounces off like the guy on the Titanic that hit the railing as the ship was going down. He bounced off, and Steven Seagal dies, Wayne, at 43 minutes. That's for you.
We don't know that, though. You don't know it. No, I'm just kidding.
You don't know?
No, he's gone.
You know
he's
what?
Done.
It's
he's
the same confidence that I have that Mace Windu is still alive when the Senator Palpatine lightning forced him out the window, and he fell.
Yeah, if it's not on camera, you don't know.
It's not on camera. You know, stop it.
It's rough.
So Steven Seagal dies.
But imagine
at
how different.
Minutes.
Imagine how different this movie would have been. Well, no, first
I'm gonna I'm gonna do that clip. This is for you, Wayne.
We're not gonna make it. You are.
So
now imagine how different this movie would have been had he survived, and all he would have wanted would have done is just, no, let's kill them all. And I squint, kills every terrorist, kills the sleeper because he just automatically knows who
it
is.
Kills them with a gun, and, but kills them with the eye squint.
Oh, deadly.
I think it would have definitely been an interesting movie where if he had survived, because
I would not have liked it.
Because, you know, Kurt Russell's character was supposed to stay on the stealth, you know, plane. He was not supposed to go up into the airliner. Steven Seagal, as the general, you know, or the Secretary of Defense, basically like talked to him and said, I know you wrote the book on, you know, boarding a hijacked terrorist, plane. You know, this is your bread and butter. And of course, then the guy who is made for the job dies as, you know, Kurt Russell's like, we're not going to make it. You are. I mean, it's a valiant death. I get it. It's a valiant death. But
is it weird, though, that like while Cabby is unconscious and paralyzed, that he climbs all the way up and like squeezes.
Yeah, somehow
like
he's
that lady
to, like,
that's like trying to get in
body.
Front of you. And like, why? Just wait. Wait your turn. That was kind of
I found it weird
moment,
that like
but...
it went from him being unconscious. There's a lot of inconsistencies with injuries in this film. Cappy, he apparently fell and knocked it, like he got knocked out. He's unconscious. But then later we figure out that he is paralyzed. All right. Just like one of these stewardesses as the terrorists start like, you know, taking their positions to hijack the plane. The guy comes out from around a corner and he hits her and she falls to the ground. And I'm thinking, oh, OK, he just knocked her out. Cool. But then later on, as Halle Berry comes down to the next level or the lower level of the plane, she finds her on the ground and turns her over because she thinks that she's still hurt. No, you see like part of her neck sticking out, like the bone is protruding. And I'm thinking,
well, she hit that that little cart.
Oh, she hit.
And,
okay,
you know,
so she hit the cart. Okay, I wasn't entirely paying attention to like. I was just like, oh god, she got hit with the gun. Good lord.
The very cliche, like fell, tripped, and dead.
So she pulled a Hillary Swank. That's what I'm thinking. Okay.
Yes,
she pulled a $1 million baby.
After they kind of figure their stuff out, and they start kind of a plan of action gets put into place. You know, there's a lot of tense moments from here on out. It is intense city, not intense, but intense. Yeah, you know what I mean. So, but like, there's a lot of moments where you for an older film, it gets you. You're like, I know it's all gonna work out because it's in an older film. You know, they're not that bold to like kill off. Main characters. This is not George R. R. Martin.
Yeah.
But they actually have some heart-pounding moments where they're setting up the cameras, when they come down to, when the pilot comes down to see what happened, and you're like, oh no, they're gonna get caught. No, they didn't. Okay, all right. Still going.
Again, you're very much right. There's a lot of tense moments. Even when it's just the terrorists on the level and you have our military men that are in the upper level of the plane while they're, you know, sneaking around and looking through their, you know, micro cameras that they've drilled through the ceiling of the plane or even the floor, and they're listening and they're watching. So, I mean, those are even tense moments because they're trying to find the lead guy and they know that there's the nerve agent on the plane and BD Wong is in the luggage compartment, like slicing through bags, trying to find the chemical that is being, you know, brought on the plane to basically explode over the eastern seaboard and, you know, kill millions of people. Because what did Kurt Russell say in the war room, basically, that a single drop of this chemical would kill everybody in this room. And there was at least like 12 people in there. So think of like a whole canister. Now multiply those canisters by at least 20.
Yeah, but that kind of brings you to that like childish, oh, one drop of this can kill everyone. I win. Like, no, stop. They don't. I mean, yes, I'm sure there's some crazy crap out there that does this, but does everything have to be this lethal? Why can't it just. And how did the bomb get on this plane? TSA.
How did the bomb get on the plane? Nathan.
Oh, my gosh.
When they started taking over the plane, one of the guys went into the galley where they're having all the food. He reaches into a cabinet and he pulls out, not handguns, he pulls out like three fully loaded and ready AK-47s. How did those get on the plane?
He should have pulled out some ham sandwiches too and like, this is delicious.
I could see somehow the bomb being like loaded into the baggage compartment, somehow being disguised or, you know, made to look like something else. Okay, so obviously there's an inside job somewhere, but come on. How are the AK-47s? They weren't even covered up. They weren't wrapped in anything. They weren't like dismembered and put into separate bags. They were fully equipped and ready.
This is the shortcuts that the movie takes to just like,
it's just like plot holes. Let's just get to them. Plot holes. They're going to blow up a plane.
Yeah. I mean, if they're believing that this plane literally mated with this other plane and they got in through the secret compartment on this plane and they're just chilling in avionics, they're totally going to believe that there's guns on board every plane like this, you know,
right
behind the ham sandwiches.
And some ham sandwiches. You know, it's to this point where, again, they find the bomb, they find the chemicals, it's attached to even more explosives, and Cahill, you know, Oliver Platt's character, is just like freaking out. He's chewing on his straw. You have Cappy looking at it going, oh, well, crap. All right, we need to try and defuse this before my morphine wears off. And it's multiple stressful situations where they're trying to defuse the bomb in the luggage compartment. You have Kurt Russell and the rest of the men focusing on when they're going to, like, you know, bum rush the rest of the terrorists on the plane. You have the lead terrorist kind of just being charismatic, slightly threatening to everyone else. But then again, it's one of those like non-consistent stories where you have the action on the side and everything is flowing right there. That makes sense. But again, it's the background. It's the initiative as to why he's doing this. It seems to be all focused on the fact that his brother was taken, but then his brother is released and he still wants to go with it.
But I actually really like that. I like that it's like, no, that was not kind of like Die Hard where, release all these people. We don't give a shit about those people. Like, we want these, all this money, we're good. Like, really? Okay, interesting. I did not see that coming, but, and they're wanting to make a point.
Right.
That's a way to make a point.
You have a different consistency of the anxiety-filled kind of like situations at different parts of the plane. But with those, that's the majority of this movie. It's not a steady story that is, you know, going and progressing, but really it's one big chunk of setting up to do things. It's them getting ready. That's a majority of this film. And again, it's
a lot of hold your breath. Right. Okay, now release, breathe for 2 seconds, hold your breath, do it again. It's a lot of that.
And I think it's understandable to have like a majority of the film to be the setup, because especially they can't rush into anything. They have to be quiet while, you know, crawling around in the upper levels so they're not heard. They have to wait off patiently so they're not caught in the lower levels. They have to wait for Halle Berry to like sneak over and get on the phone without getting, you know, pistol whipped again. It's a slow and steady setup to the climax of this movie when they, you know, they blow the lights, they drop down from the panels, they shoot all the terrorists, which in turn, you know, one of them just, as he's dying, his finger pulls the trigger and it blows holes into the side of the plane, which again just depressurizes the cabin, and you see like three people in their chair just get sucked out of the hole. I mean, that is the intense moment. This is when it gets action packed, when they finally, you know, storm the plane from their hiding places and start to take everybody out.
So when he goes for the sleeper and there's that moment, first of all, love when his hair's like slicked back, he's got a hoodie on, like he's kind of just all relaxed, right. But but at the same time, nervous as hell. His hair is just sopping wet, so he just kind of slicks it back. No big deal. Silenced pistol, like James Bond.
Yeah, you know what? And he does have the tuxedo, which he had to put on the sweatshirt to, like, you know, cover up the tuxedo look with him. But you know what? It is, he's looking good. He's looking on point. His hair slicked back. He's kind of calm but nervous at the same time. But you know what?
Yeah, why didn't he go with the tuxedo? Why didn't he really get dressed up?
He definitely would have looked out of place. Like, it would have seemed true. Off. I think it would have seemed
The hoodie was...
You even have John Leguizamo was almost, like, making fun of him earlier in the movie when he...
got
called out of an event where he was all dressed up, and he flies in with Steven Seagal, and John Leguizamo almost sees him. He says, like, who's this, 007? It's like...
But he owns them.
He's and funny about it.
They're needed.
Like, when they're about to board the plane, he's all like, I hope this flight has a good movie. It's like, what are you doing? Who are you? Why?
you're about to go up against, like, terrorists, and this is a real issue. This is not...
Just sit there thinking, like, oh, I hope it has a good movie. Don't eat the chicken. But
I hope they have a kosher meal. Come on.
I mean, when he's going to go for the sleeper, because they know that someone on that plane has a little remote control to the bomb, because while Cappy and Cahill are trying to, like, fix the bomb, someone keeps running tests on it. And Cappy keeps getting pissed because it's setting them back each time. Again,
which
the steady progression of
I don't understand
up for
how the
plunge.
But it doesn't make any sense how they just, like, keep dismantling this bomb more and more and more. They keep taking it apart. This hard drive is exposed.
Right.
Completely. And they just keep kind of going in deeper until finally they're at this point where they have to thread the eye of the needle. Of course, Cappy doesn't got anything because he's paralyzed, so Oliver Platt's got to... Cahill's up for the task with his magic wand.
Magic wand, which is it's a straw. This is like his coping mechanism for dealing with his stress. He just chews on the straw.
Yeah, use your cigarettes. Like, that'll work. The one thing that's keeping you relaxed. Let's go with that.
So to save the bomb from going off, apparently these two metal... cone-shaped ends have to drop and touch each other, and I guess that, like, detonates. It sends the charge throughout the bomb. But
yeah, it completes the circuit.
Completes the circuit. I'm not an electrician.
Yeah, I'm not a bomb maker by any means. So yeah,
but, like, he sticks the straw in between the two, and of course it cancels it out. It has nowhere to go. But then, as the plane is depressurizing and everybody is shooting everybody, you have the plane kind of go wibbly wobbly, and he has to, like, hold the straw in because the bomb is shifting from side to side, and it's going to knock.
Impossible.
It's going to knock that straw out. And if that straw leaves its placement, boom.
But it doesn't. But it doesn't. Yay. Cause somehow
they can say, like, oh my gosh, what happened? The sleeper, he pressed detonate on his little remote control, and they're listening on the radio, and they're like, here, you take a listen. And Kurt Russell puts it up to his ear, and he listens through, and he's like, oh, he hears us laughing, and they're like, we did it. Do you got anything else for us? Ha, 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 ha. And I'm thinking to myself, for a man who has a severe back injury and was just thrown around on the plane, he is laughing far too hard. I'm like, you.
Oh, the morphine really kicked in again.
Oh, that's what it is. The morphine finally kicked in.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know what? I think this would be a fantastic time because it's almost getting to, like, to the end of the film. You know what? They take out the terrorists, but this is a moment for You Can Say That Again.
Oh, my goodness. That's the most badass thing I've ever heard.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
You can say that again.
So with You Can Say That Again, we always look for lines that we love to quote from films, whether it be the funniest, the most impactful, or just that, like, whoa, kind of moment. So we love to look for lines that are great, but also ones that are terrible.
Yeah.
So
you gotta have the good
have the good
and evil. Yeah.
What do you got for your best line? We'll do best.
You're gonna hate it. You're gonna hate it because one, I've already foreshadowed it and I've already said it. It's landing gear.
Oh,
I love.
What am I missing? What am I missing?
The way he said, landing gear. Like, really? And it's not just one time. It's not just when he's about to land and, what am I forgetting? Landing gear. Okay, it's down. He has to first bring it down. They miss the pass. Put it back up. And then one more time, landing gear. So, yeah, I loved it. Every time I watch it, that's my favorite line that I look forward to, and I laugh, and I have a cocktail and enjoy it. And it's amazing. What about you? What is your favorite line?
Honestly, it's more to the point where it's right at the end of the movie before they start, you know, having the nosedive, and Kurt Russell has to rush in and save the plane from crashing. It's when he meets face to face the head terrorist. And
Perot.
Yeah, and he looks him in the eye, and the man asks him, he says, "Who are you?" And just Kurt Russell just kind of like shrugs and looks at him. He says, "No one."
I like that. I like the line right after that when he says, "It's over."
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's more of like a defining moment. He says, "It's over." "It's not over." And it's like, no.
And he goes, "No, it's over." Check the scoreboard. Yeah.
He holds up the remote. And he's like, no, he's like, but it's weird. It's a weird response to him saying, "I'm no one." But I like the fact that he says he's no one because he does know that he's nobody. He knows that he wasn't the right man for the job for this, you know, mission. It was all Steven Seagal, but he is in turn proving himself. But it's kind of weird how the guy looks at him and he says, "I'm nobody." And he just responds, "Oh, you are a clever man." It's like, okay, what is that? What does that have to do with
cool.
anything?
Is that a compliment? I'll take right. it.
And then he shoots the pilots through the wall, and they die. And, you know, John
somehow
Leguizamo's
the glass doesn't
and,
get shot.
Huh?
Somehow the glass doesn't get
yeah,
shot.
Yeah, somehow the glass doesn't get shot. It hits just the pilots and some controls.
And a couple of control panels. Thank God, not the ones that are needed.
Right. So he kind of like pulls that moment of like highway to hell. Or runway to hell, you know, who can fly a plane? And he gets in there.
He doesn't even ask anybody.
No. He just jumps in. He jumps in and he has Halle Berry with him because for some reason, despite being
She's
a stewardess, I'm not saying stewardesses can't fly a plane. I'm just trying to think, like, are they truly that knowledgeable? Like, would they know exactly like what has to happen?
I would err on the side of caution and say that she knows more about the plane than, you know.
Well, than the average Joe. They would definitely know more. But I'm wondering if actually stewardesses have to go through certain types of training in order to know, like, how and why the plane would be doing what it's doing. So if they do have to
That's a good question. If you are a stewardess or steward, you know, man, please write us at The Real Feels Podcast and let us know.
We are curious, so we
can know more.
Yeah.
Now, Drew, what was your worst line? Oh, what did you hate?
You know what? The worst line is not because it's bad. It's to the point of where you have to groan. And I already mentioned it. It's when John Leguizamo is all like, "I hope there's a good movie on this plane." And it's a groaner. It's not because it's bad.
He looks at the camera, waka, waka, waka.
It's just a groaner line for me.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I agree. It's not, they can't all be winners.
Right.
But my worst line, it's more annoying when he says it. When they're talking about the sleeper and he says, "Well, you know, yeah, I've never seen him before." And he goes, "Well, what do you mean?" And he's like, "Well, you know, I saw a picture of him when he was a kid, blah, blah, blah."
Oh, yeah.
And then he says, "But I'd know him if I saw him." No,
right.
I'm sorry.
Okay. So the lead guy, you know, Kurt Russell, is saying, "Oh, I haven't seen him in 23 years. The last picture I saw of him was when he was off at university. Like, I wouldn't know if I saw him." But he says he can hear his voice and know. And again, I'm thinking to myself.
You know, he says. I'd know him if I saw
right.
him. I'm like,
but it's like,
wait a minute.
Even if he's listening, he's listening to the voices, and I'm thinking, even if someone like keeps, you know, their vocal cords nice and, you know, healthy, and they don't get sick, or they, you know, don't have any surgery.
Just watching a movie.
Like, people do not sound the same after 20 years. Their voice is going to change.
It was pretty rough for me to take. Oh yeah, okay. Like, because I obviously can remember every single person I've ever met 20 years ago. And that's meeting them.
Another moment of those plot holes where we are.
You saw a picture of him. Come on, yeah. Okay. Overlooked. Well,
so they're flying the plane. Or sorry, Kurt Russell is flying the plane. He's supposed to land it at the airport, but he's coming in too hot, and he has to pull the plane back out, and he has to come around for another pass, and you know, he's thinking, oh man, I can't do that. Wait a minute, I know where.
Even the firefighter trolls him, is like, oh, this guy sucks.
Yeah, the firefighters are watching, and they're like, oh my god, this is too much. No. What is he doing? But as he's pulling the plane up and he has to fly it again, he's looking around, he says, oh, okay, there's the freeway, and those, you know, there's those buildings. I know exactly where I am. That's my airport. So he goes to a smaller airport to land this plane, which in turn has a shorter runway. He's not going to make it. As he's pulling the plane down, he does get it to the ground, but again, he's still coming in too hot.
Landing gear.
And he's knocking out like other smaller planes where it's like, you know, come to, you know, so-and-so Airways, learn to fly. And it's like knocking and blowing up these smaller planes.
Millions of dollars going out the window with this. Yeah.
And like I was telling you the other night, I did not know that much like on freeways, they have runaway like semi-truck ramps. Where they will, you know, go uphill, and they can hit like giant mounds of sand and dirt to basically stop them. I didn't know they had those for runways for planes.
They did that after this movie. They were like, you know what? We should, after executive decision, we should have runaway plane areas. Let's do that. Let's make that happen.
You know, throughout this entire thing, there's, as we have said, there's high anxiety. There's tense moments. But the one thing that kept me calm, cool, and collected is Kurt Russell's piercing blue eyes.
They get you.
They get you. They're right there.
And his hair goes back to being nice and soft. And
of course it does. It's like, know, one of those movie magic moments where clearly they were just swimming and then getting out, you know, of the water 30 seconds later. Oh, do I have perfectly dry hair? And it's.
Does he go back to the tuxedo look at the end?
I can't remember if he is back in the tuxedo or not.
Did he just throw the beanie over, the hoodie over his tuxedo? Really?
I think he may have. You know what? No, he is in the tuxedo. Because the military guys, when they're about to get on their vehicle to be taken away,
they salute him.
And he kind of like gives a you know, half-assed kind of salute back. He is in the tuxedo. He went back.
He's one of the guys now.
But it's man, it's the ending that is, again, it's one of those, not man, this almost made it to my cut it out, where it's not the romance. I can deal with the romance that he has, you know, started to get feelings for Halle Berry. That's fine. Asking her to coffee, that's even fine too. But it's when the FBI pulls up and says, you know, they ask him like, hey, Washington needs you. You need to like basically debrief. And
Grant.
It's like, Washington needs you. You need to go and debrief. And they have the car for him. He's cool. He's like, I gotta go. But then for some reason, he grabs Halle Berry, puts her in the back of the car, shuts the door, and then they start driving away. And of course, it's that, you know, typical, you can hear inside the car despite it, you know, driving off in the distance. And he's all like, so do you like hockey? She's like, hockey? No, I like baseball. I'm thinking, what does this have to do with anything?
It's
what's the point of this?
Yeah, it's the wrap up that fails to compare to things like Die Hard or The Rock, where movies that probably are a little bit more superior in a lot of areas, and one of those being finale, the ending. It doesn't blow your mind, but it's just kind of like, meh, okay, cool, right. We're out.
Yeah, and
it's his first film.
Okay, you know what? You know, you are right.
It's Stewart's first film.
It is his first film. Like we talked about earlier, he has good credentials under his belt. Not necessarily for directing, although I do enjoy Star Trek Nemesis, and U.S. Marshals was all right. But his editing prowess, yeah, as we had you know, touched on, is fantastic. But yeah.
He does a good job.
Yeah, this was executive decision, folks. That was it.
And I hope you guys all enjoyed it as much as, I mean, I do every time I watch it. I love it.
Again, I'm very happy you brought this to my attention. It's it was an enjoyable film. It, again, predictable, but enjoyable. It was
And when Wayne watches this, he's going to feel the morphine kick in right as Steven Seagal flies out.
He's going to hit at 43 minutes when Steven Seagal dies, and he's going to be like, you know what? I'm good. I don't even need to finish the movie.
I don't need to finish it. Yeah, I'm done.
That's where I'm in. You know what? This was actually, so it was the first movie where Steven Seagal died, his character, and he wouldn't have another character die until 2010 in Machete. So, Wayne, if you want another movie where Steven Seagal dies, go watch Machete.
And you know, I would give that that death of his, I'd give it 5 stars. But you know what else is 5 stars?
What is 5 stars?
A review that we got from via VHS.
Ooh, that's our good friend Wes.
Mr. Sweet Emotion. He says, 5 stars, warm fuzzies and white knuckles. Explore the emotional range of movies. Great show. I love exclamation marks. 5 stars.
Wes is a good guy.
We thank you, bud.
You can find his show if you go over and look at the Podfix Network. It's via VHS. He just recently wrapped up a March Madness kind of pool for different 80s films. It was a good run for a bunch of movies. I believe The Empire Strikes Back took the gold for that one. So thank you,
as
Wes.
It should.
That was a nice heartfelt.
What about other 5-star reviews? You got any others?
I do. You know what? I have one from a new fan to the show, but also a good friend, a recent friend that I kind of have been talking back and forth with, and I listened to his show and watched a couple of his live recordings. He's a good guy. His name is Sean Faust, and he's from the What Does It Matter podcast. And this is a fun show, you guys. You should definitely go check it out. It's on iTunes. Definitely go check them out. So Sean writes, I love movies. I listen to quite a few movie podcasts. I enjoy them all for what they are. Real Feels has a little extra something to their show that has me looking forward to hearing more immediately. Their fun, their references to other film and TVs within their movie reviews is always refreshing. And of course, I'm looking forward to Real Feels covering Real Steel.
Ooh.
Thank you for not being just another run-of-the-mill podcast. Sean, thank you.
Yeah, and Sean, that's an interesting play on words with movie. I like that. I like that. Because, I mean, I'm okay with that movie.
It's not a bad movie.
You never know.
Maybe if we do like a top 10 list or like a themed month where we do Hugh Jackman or robot movies, or again a top 10 list of kind of things. Because I had thrown out a Twitter poll out there, and it seems a lot of people are wanting top 10 lists.
Where can they get that Twitter poll,
you know,
at? What is our Twitter handle?
On Twitter at Real Feels Pod. You know, go on there. Find it. It's pinned to our profile page, and I think it has a few days left. So if you want to go on there and check it, if not, I'll throw another Twitter poll out there sometime soon. Or frankly, if you have suggestions on what you want to see on the show, or you know, any ideas you want to throw our way, we are more than welcome to take some input. You can reach us at realfeelspodcast@gmail.com. Again, you can hit us up at Twitter at realfeelspod. You can even look for us on Facebook. Just type in The Real Feels Podcast.
Lots of ways to get
Definitely
in touch.
Lots of ways to get in touch. And
it's 2018.
It is 2018. And, you know, with these 5-star reviews, people, we would love some more 5-star reviews. If you get on there on
Keep
iTunes,
come.
Just, you know, write it all out. We want to feel your feels. 5 stars.
5 stars. We just subliminally message them throughout the next podcast. You're just going to hear it. Landing gear, 5 stars. That's all you're going to take away.
Exactly. Oh, man. You know, guys, in the coming weeks, we have some fantastic episodes for you. We got them all planned out. We're ready. Oh, and I am super excited. So the next episode is actually, let me straighten my imaginary tie. Is going to be my birthday episode.
Aww. Happy birthday to you.
So we're going to be doing a fantastic movie from 1986. We're going to be doing a comedy. I'm not going to tell you what it is just yet. In the following week, I'll be giving you a little teaser, so you got to find out what it is. Again, in order to do that, check us out on Twitter, check us out on Facebook, and then you'll find out what we're going to be doing. But it is a comedy from 1986, the year that Nathan and I were both born.
You know, it's a movie that three friends could watch. So yeah, it's it's really good.
That's a subtle. So after my birthday episode, we're going to be doing our first fantasy film, and this is also going to be, as we had said in our previous episode on The Theory of Everything, with that lovely bio of Stephen Hawking. We are going to have our first fantasy movie, also from the 80s, but more importantly, we are going to have our very first guest on the show, and it's going to be our good friend, Jack.
And he's from the 80s, I believe.
He's also from the 80s.
I believe, yeah.
He is. We are a rad-tad 80s group.
Children of the 80s.
So, you know, I know people are going to love the show. They're going to love the movies that we're picking for them. If they love the idea, again, of more 80s, guys, you can check out our podcast. There are other podcasts that you can also go ahead and check out. I would recommend the Retro Cinema Podcast with Gidget Von LaRue and Angry Man. They talk about the 80s movies that they loved then and still do now. Go check them out, the Retro Cinema Podcast. You don't want to miss them.
So angry.
He's so angry. I don't know his real name, and I don't think I'm supposed to. But
and Gidget.
Gidget's great. Gidget was one of the people who
love it.
Went on to the Countdown podcast with Paul while Wayne was recovering. And she did a great job. She did a great job while Wayne was recovering. Good. So
good pitch hitting.
You know, Wayne, we hope you enjoyed the episode. We hope you are feeling better. And personally, we cannot wait until you are back on the air with Paul, because I know he misses you. I know the soundboard misses you. But more importantly, your fans miss you, bud.
And that about does it for us at The Real Feels. Drew.
Nathan.
I've had a lot of fun today.
This was fun. This was fun. You brought a new movie into my life that I had never seen before, and I am eternally grateful.
I think that we'll do this again, yeah?
Possibly in 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, same bad time.
Same bad channel.
We'll see you guys later.
Hey, guys. Thanks for being the realist.
And the feelist.
Yeah.